Chapter 48. Near Avendasura. Avienda took one final step and was out of the forest of glass pillars. She took a deep breath, then glanced back at the path she had taken. The central plaza of Ruidian was an awe-inspiring sight. Smooth white flagstones carpeted the entire square, save for the absolute center. There stood an enormous tree, branches spread wide like arms reaching to embrace the sun. The massive tree had a perfection she could not explain. It had a natural symmetry. No missing branches, no gaping holes in its leafy upper reaches. It was particularly impressive since when she'd last seen it, it had been blackened and burned. In a world where other plants were dying without explanation, this one healed and flourished faster than ever should have been possible. Its leaves rustled soothingly in the wind, and its gnarled roots poked through the ground like the aged fingers of a wise elder. The tree made her want to sit and bask in the simple peace of the moment. It was as if this tree were the ideal, the one after which all other trees were patterned. In legend it was called Avendasura, the tree of life. To the sides sat the glass columns. There were dozens of them, perhaps hundreds, forming concentric rings. Spindly and thin, they reached high into the sky. As purely, even superlatively natural as Avendasura was, these columns were equally unnatural. They were so thin and tall, logic said that the first gust of wind should have toppled them. It wasn't that they were aberrant, merely artificial. When she had first entered days before, there had been Guy Shine in white, carefully picking up fallen leaves and twigs. They had retreated as soon as they had seen her. Was she the first to go through the glass pillars since Ruidian's transformation? Her own clan had sent no one, and she was certain she would have heard of it if the others had. That left only the Shido, but they had rejected Rand's claims about the Aiel past. Avienda suspected that if any Shido had come, they would not have been able to bear what was shown here. They would have passed into the center of the glass columns and never returned. That had not been the case for Avienda. She had survived. Indeed, everything she'd seen had been expected, almost disappointingly so. She sighed, walking over to Avendasura's trunk, then looking up through its web of branches. Once, this plaza had been cluttered with other Turangreal. This was where Rand had first discovered the access keys he had used to cleanse Saidin. That wealth of Turangreal was gone now. Moiraine had claimed many pieces for the White Tower, and the Aiel who lived here must have taken the others away. That left only the tree, the columns, and the three rings that women went through on their first trip here. The trip that made them apprentice wise ones. She remembered some of her trip through those rings, which had showed her life, her many possible lives, to her. Really, only bits and pieces remained in her memory. Her knowledge that she would love Rand, that she would have sister wives. Included in that knowledge was the impression that she'd return here, to Ruidian. She had known, though only stepping into this courtyard again had sparked some of those memories to life in her mind. She sat down cross-legged between two of the great tree's roots. The soft wind was soothing, the air dry and familiar, the dusty scent of the threefold land reminding her of her childhood. Her trip through the columns had certainly been immersive. She had expected to see the origins of the Aiel, perhaps witness the day when they had, as a people, decided to take up the spears and fight. She'd anticipated a noble decision, where honor overcame the inferior lifestyle dictated by the way of the leaf. She'd been surprised to see how mundane, almost accidental, the true event had been. No grand decision, only a man who had been unwilling to let his family be murdered. There was honor in wanting to defend others, but he had not approached his decision with honor. She rested her head back against the trunk of the tree. The Aiel did deserve their punishment in the threefold land, and they did have To as a people to the Aes Sedai. She had seen everything she had expected, but many of the things she had been hoping to learn had been absent. Aiel would continue to visit this place for centuries, as they had for centuries, and each of them would learn something that was now common knowledge. That bothered her deeply. She looked upward, watching branches quiver in the breeze, several leaves falling and drifting down toward her. One passed her face, brushing her cheek before alighting on her shawl. Passing through the glass columns was no longer a challenge. Originally, this Tarangreal had provided a test. Could the potential leader face and accept the Aiel's darkest secret? As a maiden, Avienda had been tested in body and strength. Becoming a wise one was to test a person emotionally and mentally. Ruidian was to be the capstone of that process, the final test of mental endurance. But that test was gone now. More and more she was coming to believe that tradition for the sake of tradition was foolishness. Good traditions, strong Aiel traditions, taught the ways of Ji'ito, methods of survival. Avienda sighed, standing. The forest of columns looked like the strange lines of frozen water she had seen during winter in the wetlands. Icicles, Elaine had called them. These grew up from the ground, pointing toward the heavens, things of beauty and power. It was sad to witness their lapse into irrelevance. Something occurred to her. Before she had left Camelin, she and Elaine had made a remarkable discovery. Avienda had manifested a talent in the one power, the ability to identify Tarangreal. Could she determine exactly what the glass pillars did? They couldn't have been created specifically for the Aiel, could they? Most things of great power like this hailed from very ancient days. The pillars would have been created during the Age of Legends, then adapted to the purpose of showing the Aiel their true past. There was so much they didn't know about Tarangreal. Had the ancient Aes Sedai really understood them, the same way Avienda understood exactly how a bow or spear worked? Or had they themselves been mystified by the things they created? The One Power was so wondrous, so mysterious, that even working practiced weaves often made Avienda feel like a child. She stepped up to the nearest glass pillar, careful not to pass inside the ring. If she touched one of the rods, perhaps her talent would let her read something about them. It was dangerous to experiment with Tarangreal, but she had already passed their challenge and was unscathed. Hesitantly, she reached out and laid fingers on the slick, glassy surface. It was about a foot thick. She closed her eyes, trying to read the pillar's function. She sensed the powerful aura of the pillar. It was far more potent than any of the Tarangreal she had handled with Elaine. Indeed, the pillars seemed alive, somehow. It was almost as if she could sense an awareness from them. That gave her a chill. Was she touching the pillar, or was it touching her? She tried to read Tarangreal as she had done before, but this one was vast. Incomprehensible, like the One Power itself. She inhaled sharply, disoriented by the weight of what she felt. It was as if she had suddenly fallen into a deep, dark pit. She snapped her eyes open, pulling her hand away, palm quivering. This was beyond her. She was an insect, trying to grasp the size and mass of a mountain. She took a breath to steady herself, then shook her head. There was nothing more to be done here. She turned from the glass pillars and took a step. She was Malidra, 18, but scrawny enough to appear much younger. She crawled in the darkness, careful, quiet. It was dangerous to get this close to the lightmakers. Hunger drove her forward. It always did. The night was cold, the landscape barren. Malidra had heard stories of heaven, a place beyond the distant mountains, where the land was green and food grew everywhere. She didn't believe those lies. The mountains were just lines in the sky, jagged teeth. Who could climb something so tall? Maybe the lightmakers could. They did come from that direction, usually. Their camp was ahead of her, glowing in the darkness. That glow was too steady to be fire. It came from the balls they carried with them. She inched closer, crouching, bare feet and hands dusty. There were a few men and women of the folk with her. Grimy faces, stringy hair, ragged beards on the men. A mishmash of clothing. Tattered trousers, garments that might once have been shirts. Anything to keep the sun off during the day because the sun could kill. And did. Melidra was the last of four sisters. Two dead by the sun and hunger. One dead by the bite of a snake. But Melidra survived. Anxiously, she survived. The best way was to follow the lightmakers. It was dangerous, but her mind barely noticed danger anymore. That was what happened when virtually anything could kill you. Melidra passed a bush, watching the lightmaker guards. Two sentries, carrying their long, rod-like weapons. Melidra had found one on a dead man once, but she hadn't been able to make it do anything. The lightmakers had magics, the same magics that created their food and their lights. Magics that kept them warm in the bitter cold at night. The two men wore strange clothing, trousers that fit too well, coats covered with pockets and glistening bits of metal. Both had hats, though one wore his back, held around his neck by a thin leather strap. The men chatted. They didn't have beards like the folk did. Their hair was darker. One of the other folk got too close and Melidra hissed at her. The woman shot back a glare but moved away. Melidra stayed at the edge of the light. The lightmakers wouldn't see her. Their strange glowing orbs ruined their night vision. She rounded their massive wagon. There were no horses, only the wagon, large enough to house a dozen people. It moved magically during the daylight, rolling on wheels nearly as wide as Melidra was tall. She had heard, in the hushed, broken communication of folk, that in the east, the lightmakers were creating a massive roadway. It would pass directly through the waste. It was made by laying down strange pieces of metal. They were too big to pry up, though Jorsham had shown her a large nail he had found. He used it to scrape meat off bones. It had been quite a while since she had eaten well, not since they'd managed to kill that merchant in his sleep 2 years ago. She could still remember that feast, digging into his stores, eating until her stomach ached. Such an odd feeling, wondrous and painful. Most lightmakers were too careful for her to kill them in their sleep. She didn't dare face them when they were awake. They could make one such as her vanish with a stare. Nervously, trailed by a couple of other folk, she rounded the wagon and approached it from the back. Sure enough, here the lightmakers had tossed some of the leavings from their earlier meal. She scuttled forward and began to dig through the trash. There were some cuttings of meat, strips of fat. She snatched these up eagerly, holding them close before the others could see, and stuffed them into her mouth. She felt dirt grind against her teeth, but meat was food. She hurriedly picked through the waste some more. A bright light shone on her. She froze, hand halfway to her mouth. The other two folk screamed, scrambling away. She tried to do likewise, but tripped. There was a hiss of sound, one of the lightmaker weapons, and something popped against her back. It felt like she'd been hit with a small rock. She collapsed, the pain sudden and sharp. The light faded slightly. She blinked, eyes adjusting, even as she felt her life seeping out and around her hands.
"I told you," a voice said.
Two shadows moved in front of the light. She had to run. She tried to rise, but only managed to thrash weakly.
"Blood and Charflern,"
a second voice said. A silhouette knelt beside her.
"Poor thing, almost a child. She wasn't doing any harm."
Flern snorted.
"No harm? I've seen these creatures try to slit a sleeping man's throat, all for his trash. Bloody pests."
The other shadow looked at her, and she caught sight of a grim face, twinkling eyes like stars. The man sighed, rising.
Next time we bury the trash.
He retreated back toward the light. The second man, Flurn, stood watching her. Was that her blood? All over her hands? Warm, like water that had been sitting in the sun for too long? Death did not surprise her. In a way, she'd been expecting it for most of her 18 years.
Bloody Aiel, Flurn said as her sight faded.
Avienda's foot hit the flagstone in Ruidian's square, and she blinked in shock. The sun had changed in the sky above. Hours had passed. What had happened? The vision had been so real, like her viewings of the early days of her people, but she could make no sense of it. Had she gone even farther back into history? That seemed like the age of legends, the strange machines, clothing, and weapons. But that had been the waste. She could remember distinctly being Melidra. She could remember years of hunger, of scavenging, of hatred and fear of the Lightmakers. She remembered her death, the terror, trapped and bleeding, that warm blood on her hands. She raised a hand to her head, sick and unsettled. Not by the death. Everyone woke from the dream, and while she did not welcome it, she would not fear it. No, the horrible thing about the vision had been the complete lack of honor she'd seen. Killing men in the night for their food? Scavenging for half-chewed meat in the dirt? Wearing scraps? She'd been more an animal than a person. Better to die. Surely the Aiel couldn't have come from roots like those long ago. The Aiel in the Age of Legends had been peaceful servants, respected. How could they have started as scavengers? Perhaps this was merely one tiny group of Aiel. Or maybe the man had been mistaken. There is little way to tell from this single vision. Why had she been shown it? She took a hesitant step away from the glass columns, and nothing happened. No further visions. Disturbed, she began to walk from the plaza. Then she slowed. Hesitantly, she turned back. The columns stood in the dimming light, quiet and alone, seeming to buzz with an unseen energy. Was there more? That one vision seemed so disconnected from the others she'd seen. If she'd passed into the column's midst again, would she repeat what she'd been given before? Or had she, perhaps, changed something with her talent? In the centuries since Ruidian's founding, those columns had shown the Aiel what they needed to know about themselves. The Aes Sedai had set that up, hadn't they? Or had they simply placed the Turangrial and allowed it to do what it pleased, knowing it would grant wisdom? Avienda listened to the tree's leaves rustle. Those pillars were a challenge, as sure as an enemy warrior with his spear in hand. If she passed into their midst again, she might never come out. Nobody visited this Turangrial a second time. It was forbidden. One trip through the rings. One through the columns. But she had come seeking knowledge. She would not leave without it. She turned, and taking a deep breath, walked up to the pillars, then took a step. She was Norlish. She held her youngest child close to her bosom. A dry wind tugged at her shawl. Her baby, Garlvan, started to whimper, but she quieted him as her husband spoke with the Outlanders. An Outlander village stood in the near distance, built of shacks against the foothills of the mountains. They wore dyed clothing and strangely cut trousers with buttoning shirts. They had come for the ore. How could rocks be so valuable that they would live on this side of the mountains, away from their fabled land of water and food, away from their buildings where light shone without candles, and their carts that moved without horses? Her shawl slipped, and she pulled it up. She needed a new one. This one was ragged, and she didn't have any more thread left for patching. Garlvan whimpered in her arms, and her only other living child, Maisa, held to her skirts. Maisa hadn't spoken for months now, not since her older brother had died from exposure.
"Please,"
said her husband, Metalon, to the outlanders. There were three of them, two men and a woman, all wearing trousers. Rugged folk, not like the other foreigners with their delicate features and too fine silks. Illuminated ones, those others sometimes called themselves. These three were more ordinary.
"Please," Metalon repeated. "My family."
He was a good man. Or he had been once, back when he'd been strong and fit. Now he seemed a shell of that man, his cheeks sunken. His once vibrant blue eyes stared absently much of the time, haunted. That look came from watching three of his children die in 18 months' time. Though Metalon was a head taller than any of the outlanders, he seemed to grovel before them. The lead outlander, a man with a bushy beard and wide, honest eyes, shook his head. He returned to Metalon the sack full of stones.
"The Raven Empress, may she always draw breath, forbids it. No trading with Aiel. We could be stripped of our charter for talking to you." "We have no food," Metalon said. "My children are starving. These stones contain ore. I know that it is the type for which you search. I spent weeks gathering it. Give us a bit of food. Something, please." "Sorry, friend," the lead outlander said. "It isn't worth trouble with the ravens. Go on your way. We don't want an incident."
Several outlanders approached from behind, one carrying an axe, two others with hiss staves. Her husband slumped. Days of travel, weeks of searching for the stones, for nothing. He turned and walked back to her. In the distance, the sun was setting. Once he reached her, she and Maisa joined him, walking away from the outlander camp. Maisa began to sniffle, but neither of them had the will or strength to carry her. About an hour away from the outlander camp, her husband found a hollow in a rock shelf. They settled in, not making a fire. There was nothing to burn. Norlish wanted to cry, but feeling anything seemed difficult. "I'm so hungry," she whispered.
"I will trap something in the morning," her husband said, staring up at the stars.
"We haven't caught anything in days," she said. He didn't reply. "What are we going to do?" she whispered. "We haven't been able to keep a home for our people since my great mother Tava's day. If we gather, they attack us. If we wander the waste, we die off. They won't trade with us. They won't let us cross the mountains. What are we going to do?" His response was to lie down, turning away from her. Her tears did come then, quiet, weak. They rolled down her cheeks as she undid her shirt to nurse Garlvan, though she had no suck for him. He didn't move. He didn't latch on. She lifted his small form and realized that he was no longer breathing. Somewhere along the walk to the hollow, he had died without her realizing it. The most frightening part was how difficult she found it to summon any sorrow at the death. Avienda's foot hit the flagstones. Around her, the forest of glass columns shimmered with prismatic color. It was like standing in the middle of an illuminator's firework. The sun was high in the sky, cloud cover remarkably gone. She wanted to leave the square forever. She had been prepared for the knowledge that the Aiel had once followed the way of the leaf. That knowledge wasn't very disturbing. They would soon fulfill their toe. But this? These scattered and broken wretches? People who didn't stand up for themselves, who begged, who didn't know how to survive off the land. To know that these were her ancestors was a shame she nearly could not bear. It was good that Randall Thor had not revealed this past to the Aiel. Could she flee? Run from the plaza and see no more? If it grew any worse, the shame would overwhelm her. Unfortunately, she knew that there was only one way out, now that she'd begun. Gritting her teeth, she took a step forward. She was Tava, 14 years old and screaming in the night as she ran from her burning house. The entire valley, really a canyon with steep sides, was in flames. Every building in the fledgling hold had been set afire. Nightmarish creatures with sinuous necks and wide wings flapped in the night above, bearing riders with bows, spears, and strange new weapons that made a hissing sound when they fired. Tava cried, searching for her family, but the hold was a mass of chaos and confusion. Some few Aiel warriors resisted, but anyone who raised a spear fell moments later, killed by arrow or by one of the invisible shots from the new weapons. An Aiel man fell before her, corpse rolling on the ground. Tadvishm had been his name, a stone dog. It was one of the few societies which still maintained an identity. Most warriors no longer held to a society. They made brothers and sisters of those with whom they camped. All too often those camps were scattered anyway. This hold was to have been different, secret, deep within the waste. How had their enemies found them? A child of only 2 years was crying. She dashed to him, snatching him from where he lay near the flames. Their homes burned. The wood had been scavenged with difficulty from the mountains on the eastern edge of the waste. She held the child close and ran toward the deeper recesses of the canyon. Where was her father? With a sudden whoosh of sound, one of the nightmarish creatures landed before her, the burst of wind making her skirt flap. A fearsome warrior sat upon the creature's back, helmet like that of an insect, mandibles sharp and jagged. He lowered his hissing staff toward her. She cried out in terror, huddling around the crying child and closing her eyes. The hissing sound never came. At a grunt and a sudden screech from the serpentine beast, she looked up and saw a figure struggling with the outlander. The firelight showed the face of her father, clean-shaven as the old traditions dictated. The beast beneath the two men lurched, throwing both to the ground. A few moments later, her father rose, holding the invader's sword in his hands, its length stained dark. The invader did not move, and behind them the beast leaped into the air, howling. Tava looked up and saw that it was following the rest of the pack. The invaders were withdrawing, leaving a broken people with burning homes. She looked down again. The scene horrified her. So many bodies, dozens, lay bleeding on the ground. The invader that her father had killed appeared to be the only enemy that had fallen.
"Gather sand," her father, Rohan, roared. "Quench the flames."
Tall, even for an Aiel, with striking red hair, he wore the old clothing of brown and tan, boots tied high to his knees. That clothing marked one as Aiel, therefore many had abandoned it. Being known as Aiel meant death. Her father had inherited his clothing from his grandfather, along with a charge.
"Follow the old ways. Remember Je'ito. Fight and maintain honor."
Though he had been in the hold for only a few days, the others listened when he yelled for them to put out the fires. Tava returned the child to a grateful mother, and then helped gather sand and dirt. A few hours later, a tired and bloodied people gathered in the center of the canyon, regarding with dull eyes what they had worked for months to build. It had been wiped out in a single night. Her father still carried the sword. He used it to direct the people. Some of the old ones said that a sword was bad luck, but why would they say that? It was only a weapon.
"We must rebuild," her father said, surveying the wreckage.
"Rebuild?" said a soot-stained man. "The granary was the first to burn. There is no food."
"We will survive," her father said. "We can move deeper into the waste."
"There is nowhere else to go," another man said. "The Raven Empire has sent words to the Far Ones, and they hunt us at the eastern border."
"They find us whenever we gather," another cried.
"It is a punishment," her father said. but we must endure.
The people looked at him. Then, in pairs or small groups, they began to walk away.
Wait, her father said, raising his hand. We must stay together, keep fighting. The clan, we are not a clan, an ashen man said. I can survive better on my own. No more fighting. They beat us when we fight.
Her father lowered the sword, its tip hitting the ground. Tava moved up beside him, worried as she watched the others walk their ways into the night. The air was still thick with smoke. The departing Aiel were shadows, melting into darkness, like swirls of dust blown on the wind. They didn't pause to bury their dead. Her father bowed his head and dropped the sword to the ash-covered ground. There were tears in Avienda's eyes. There was no shame at crying over this tragedy. She had feared the truth, and she could no longer deny it. Those had been Seanchan raiders, riding atop Rakan. The Raven Empire, the light makers from her first vision, were the Seanchan. And they hadn't existed until the middle of the current age, when Artur Hawkwing's armies had crossed the oceans. She was not seeing the deep past of her people. She was seeing their future. Her first time through the pillars, each step had taken her backward, moving her through time toward the Age of Legends. It appeared that this time the visions had started at a distant point in the future and were working back toward her day, each vision jumping back a generation or two. Tears streaking her face, she took the next step.